Welcome to the KVON Morning Show for today. We're kicking off a new series today called Mindful Mondays. And we'd like to welcome to the show for our very first Mindful Monday segment, Rob Weiss, who's the Executive Director of Mentis. Rob, welcome to the show. Great to have you. We're going to spend a little time talking about why mental and or emotional health is important, and that seems like a great place to start off a Mindful Monday series. Rob, launch right in. That's a pretty broad question, but I think you can tackle it.
I'm the executive director at Mentis, and we are a professional bilingual mental health provider to people of all stages, ages, and income levels throughout Napa County. So on that note, why is mental health important? Because really, just like physical health, being in good mental health is incredibly valuable, important at any stage of life, and really in any age. And if you think about it, the issues really vary according to where you are in your life. So when you're a teenager, a lot of what you're going through in terms of kind of identity formation and kind of making your way through the challenges of figuring out who you are and important peer relationships is different than when you're an adult and you're dealing with the challenges of relationships, of marriage, of parenting, to when you might be older. And oftentimes some of our elders face challenges around depression or isolation. So I think being in your best emotional health and state of wellness really is what we're trying to achieve, just like physical health, to function at your optimal and be your healthiest and productive, most productive person you can be.
You know, it seems like it's a little easier to see where you are, what your standing is in terms of physical health. If you look around, if you notice that you're buying bigger pants now, if you go out to play some tennis and you discover you can't catch your breath anymore like you used to, you can say, "Well, I'm not in very good physical shape. I used to be. I'm not." In terms of mental health, it's not possibly it's quite so easy for people to recognize that they're not the same as they used to be or that things have changed?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think in some sense that's why there's stigma related to it, because it's not so clear cut. And in general, I think it is actually a sign of good mental health if you have the insight and awareness to recognize about yourself that you're not doing as well as you typically do. You're feeling a little bit down or sad or blue, that you're struggling in relationships, that you're more angry or irritable than you usually are, or that you're feeling more anxious going to work and functioning on the job than you did before. So you're right, and I think part of it is trying to be educated about and what are some of the signs and symptoms if I'm not doing as well, or I'm not feeling as well, or functioning as well, or I'm down or depressed. And most commonly for people, it's depression and anxiety, which can be caused by a whole host of reasons. So in some sense, it's trying to have some recognition about those signs and symptoms. And I think that's where the stigma comes in. There hasn't been a lot of acceptance around talking about those signs and recognizing them, and then being encouraged to go get help when you realize that you're a little bit off your game, as you mentioned. Whereas physically, you would just go to the doctor, and that would be a very reasonable thing to do.
We're talking with Rob Weiss. He's the executive director of Mentis. It's our Mindful Monday debut today, and we're talking about why mental health is important. You know, it's kind of a timely question coming off a weekend that if you follow the news, you had news shows constantly asking this question about our president. Do you think the questions you're being asked about the fitness, the mental health of Donald Trump have an impact on the mental health awareness issue in general?
That's a really interesting and difficult question to answer, because I think, unfortunately, the way it's portrayed with the president, really, there's, I think, an equivalence of mental health and stability and dangerousness. And that's on a larger political level, and fitness for presidency, I think that's a very relevant question. But when you break it down to kind of a local level, communities, I think it's a little bit more tricky, because people who mental illness, if you want to call it that, or even people who have a form of a mental disorder, it varies in terms of severity, all the way from mild to moderate to severe. So depending upon where you fall in that category, there's implications. And certainly, I think the point in a larger sense I would make to you is that mental dangerous, being dangerous, typically speaking, although in the case of our president, I would say that that's another story.
It very, very untrammeled snow, as they would say, an area we've never been into really in our modern American history where these kind of questions are being asked. The other issue that comes along when, and this is a good example with Donald Trump, is that, you know, person A might look at him and say, he's nuts. Person B might say, no, that's just his personality. That's just the way he was raised. It's just the life experiences he's had. It's just his way of interacting with the world. That doesn't make him any more, you know, doesn't make him abnormal because, you know, what is normal? That's a common discussion we end up in when mental health is the topic.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple ways to look at it. There is something in the field called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which really lays out more specifically a criteria and threshold of meeting symptoms in order to qualify for a diagnosis. And I think that's been the professional attempt to more quantify this specifically. What does it look like, as you pose, so it's not so subjective, to lay out a more objective criteria? And certainly when you talk about depression, for example, or anxiety, there's some very specific criteria that are used as a, if you see a cluster of signs and symptoms that constitute making a diagnosis around a mental disorder. Again, there's various levels of severity. So that's the whole idea. So it isn't so subjective. And yet there is a piece of it that it is really hard to nail down specifically. And I think that's when really you look at how is a person's, what's their emotional state? Meaning, how is it impacting their day-to-day living, their ability to work, to parent, to go to school, to be effective in their life, to connect with other people? So I think you start looking at to function, basically. So these are the type of things I think you start evaluating from day to day to try and assess whether there's a problem or not, and whether it's a problem that needs a more significant intervention, or really what's the best course of action. Is it to see a therapist? Is medication needed? Is it just to engage in a more self care practice? You know, it just really depends.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most difficult things any parent can experience, or child of an aging parent, or just a friend of a friend, is the dilemma of, should I say something? You don't seem to be acting your normal way. How do I approach you? What can I say that won't offend you, won't drive you away? You don't want someone to turn to you and say, what, do you think I'm crazy? You know, it's a very, very challenging. Even if you're close within your family, that can be a hard thing to bring up with someone.
It can be, and it depends. Again, I keep going back to this question of severity. So, for example, on the more severe or extreme end, and which we're always concerned about, is if people are so distressed they're thinking about suicide or self-harm. In those cases, and I really would suggest across the board, a direct and straightforward approach that's respectful is always the best way to go. And maybe that's because I'm a former therapist, and that's just my way of working. But I'm a believer, especially if you're talking about self-harm or suicide, it's always important to ask people directly where they're at, how they're feeling, are they thinking about harming themselves in any way? And even if you're talking about a much more mild situation, I think sharing your observations in a way that really tries to talk about behavior and not make it so personal, because I think that's what makes it hard. If people feel like they're being attacked personally or criticized in a more personal way, as opposed to talking about some of the behaviors or the problems or the concerns you have, and again, doing it very straightforwardly and directly and empathetically, and then hopefully the person that you're working with is responsive to that. And especially, I think it also depends upon the type of relationship that you have with the person you're approaching.
Yeah. Does statistics show that there are stages of life or particular age groups that have are at greater risk for mental health problems?
You know, it's a good question. I would, you know, certainly when you talk again about suicide, there were some more identified high risk categories. But interestingly, just statistically speaking, based upon more recent statistics from the National Institute of Mental Health, which is a federal agency, you're looking at about, across the lifespan, it's about one in four people at any given year will meet the threshold or the criteria for a mental disorder, again, ranging from mild to moderate to severe. So, and when you look at teens, you look at older adults, actually the number, especially in Napa County, around depression, you're looking maybe closer to one in three. So I would say one to three, one in four, maybe one in five. But if you're anywhere in that range, to me, that's a significant problem and a significant issue that really doesn't get the attention it deserves and it should.
So if you're in a room with 10 people, chances are two or three of those 10 people
would have some type of mental disorder. Again, it could range from mild, which is transitory, to something that's more severe. So the more severe, the number goes down. So the more severe, that's probably more like one in six, one in eight. But for, crossing that whole spectrum that we talked about, one in three and one in four is probably about right.
Over time, the approach to treatment changes. There was an era, it seemed like talk therapy was the focus, and then following that, it seemed more like medication has been the focus. I don't know what the current thinking is, whether it's some mixture of the two, probably. There's been an arc here, hasn't there?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think it depends upon who you talk to, and I think you're right. I think sometimes you're in certain trends where people and practitioners go a certain direction. I mean, in general, my personal belief is that it's always good to start with the least invasive intervention possible. So to me, that's always about behavioral, emotional ways of changing your thoughts and how you approach situations and problems. I always like to begin there with people. And, certainly I think medications have their time and their place, but I always like to begin with least invasive and then work up the spectrum from there. Because certainly I think sometimes medications or the combinations of medication and therapy is effective, and medications have been shown in, I think, more severe situations to be very helpful. But I think the thing you always have to remember with medications, they are drugs, just whether it's street drugs or prescription drugs. They're changing your brain chemistry, and there's side effects whenever you do that. So I think you just have to be aware of them. You have to do your research. You have to be knowledgeable. But let's know what we're getting into when we're taking medications.
We're talking with Rob Weiss from Mentis. It's our first of a series called Mindful Mondays. How could Mentis, you are the executive director of that group, make a difference for someone listening concerned about a family member, a friend, themselves?
Well, we provide a whole range of mental health services. First and foremost, mental health treatment services or talk therapy. We also provide case management. We also provide residential treatment. So we have a whole continuum of services. And who's ever listening out there, I encourage you, if you're struggling, having a hard time, not sure what to do, need more information, need help, give us a call. And certainly our intake coordinator, Grace Ramirez, who's bilingual, English and Spanish, can get you sorted out and either get you set up with us for one of the services we offer or refer you to another provider or other resources in the community. So that number is 255-0966, and then you'll be given an option to speak with Grace and connect directly to her. So that's a good way to go. The other way is all to check out our website. All our services are listed comprehensively on our website. As I mentioned, we work with teenagers, with adults, older adults, in schools, in our office. We work with very a variety of partner agencies in the community, family resource centers, medical providers, domestic violence. So we really want to make sure we're working with people comprehensively to really give them the full range of care they need, and whether it's with us or with one of another provider or partner agency.
Very good. Rob Weiss from Mentis and our first Mindful Monday segment. Thanks for being on the show today. Good information. Appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Take care.